Episode of Pandorica Opens with myself, Ian M. Cullen, and our good friend Raisa. We're going to be talking about the previous two episodes of Doctor Who, Sleep No More and Face of the Raven, and we'll be sort of like giving our critical analysis of them. And I think, you know, we'll start in order. We'll start with Sleep No More, written by Matt Gaidis, and it's got to be the scariest Doctor Who episode we've had for a while, certainly since Blink in terms of the modern era.
Yeah, the problem I had, and this is very specific to me, I don't watch a lot of found footage stuff because it plays into my vision problems. The darker angles and some of the lighting tricks that are fundamental to that style of filming don't do people like me any favors. There were some sections that I just basically had to treat as a big finish audio with the 12th Doctor because I just couldn't quite make out what was going on. But ignoring my very specific issues and just dealing with it at the script level, I thought it was a very interesting, thought-out story. There were some really good concepts going on there. The characters, the supporting characters, were kind of stock tropey, the way they tend to be in horror films. You know, they don't do a lot of character beat type of stuff in those kinds of films with the supporting players, but you know that's to be expected. The high concept stuff, like what the creature is and why the creature was, that always very cool for me.
To me, it was very much a comment on the economy. You know,
yes.
The failing economy and the fact that they, in order to sort of like ramp up production, they need people to work longer. So they've come up with this device which they use once a month and they don't have to sleep anymore.
Yes.
I thought that was actually quite a good commentary. It's also quite a good commentary on slave labor. In a sense,
yeah.
You know, that we've got a lot of working class people that are working for really shitty wages.
Yes.
Wages that are so shitty in this country that they have to be topped up with government tax credits and stuff. And it's probably the same in the States as well.
Yeah, it is.
And, you know, they're expected to work for longer or, you know, for these crap wages and, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I thought that was a high concept of it all. The monster, I thought, was pretty funny, to be honest. That didn't scare me. It was kind of like a Sandman type thing.
Yeah. The monster was interesting for me. As cheesy as the close-up shots of the monster were, I needed those close-up shots because without them, I wouldn't have known what the monster actually looked like. Again, tied into my vision problems. Mm.
I think the monster as well, I think they kind of played into that cheesiness as well because, you know, they had it reacting to Mr. Sandman.
Yes. Yes. I did like the fact that I read an article about the scene where the bassist computer is asking that one guy to sing the song in order to get in as the passcode. The voice of the computer was... One of the producers of the show, actually, Nikki something. I can't remember her name now, but she's one of the producers of the show. And that was cool.
Yeah. But, you know, it was quite a fun episode, I think. The one aspect that I didn't like, I mean, I'm not really a fan of found footage stuff either. I just don't like the sort of like camera angles used in found footage stuff and, you know, the whole concept of it is, you know... It sort of like started with Blair Witch Project. I never got it, you know, never even got into it or got into that sort of genre.
Yeah.
I prefer a straight up story.
Yeah.
To be honest, call me traditionalist. Well, maybe I am.
I am too.
But, you know, it's sort of like a problem that I had with it was the fact that it didn't have the opening titles. And because it didn't have the opening titles, it didn't really feel like a Doctor Who episode to me in a sense.
Yeah, I have that issue too. As much as I've come to dislike the current iteration of the theme tune, and I truly do hate the thing at this point, or at least the synth line, I missed the synth line as much as I dislike it, because it's at least part of what I've come to understand as the show, and it just felt off.
Yeah, it felt very off to me. I mean, the fact of the matter is, for me growing up with Doctor Who, as in the UK as a kid and seeing every single episode before you guys, was, you know, every time you got that theme tune, it was kind of like a weekly event.
Yes,
you know,
yes.
It was kind of like something as a kid or as a teenager, you kind of might be hanging by that theme tune. And
yeah.
It was forever a challenge because Saturday when I was a kid, you know, we used to go shopping with my mum. And the challenge was always to be home in time for Doctor Who. You know?
Oh, yay. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know, there was that challenge to it. And when Doctor Who wasn't on the air, it was something like Scooby-Doo or something else that I'd have on in the evening on a Saturday for the kids.
Yeah.
Sort of thing. And
I love the fact that... in the States, we would get what are called the omnibus versions, where they would just take the serial segments, the 25-minute serial segments, and jam them up into what was basically became, in the States, a TV movie. And so we'd only hear the theme song, you know, at the beginning and at the end. And it wasn't until I started purchasing some of the VHS, I'm about to date myself, episodes on tape, that I realized it was a serial. And I actually kind of really enjoyed hearing the theme song 8 times, because you got on the VHS, you got the individual serial segments again, and so I actually got to hear the theme song 8 times, and I was so happy because I just loved that theme so much.
Yeah, I mean, it's always an event, and I think by removing the theme tune from Sleep No More, they kind of took that away from it.
Yes.
You know, and you know, I don't know if they'll put the theme tune back on a DVD edition because, you know, let's face it, on a DVD edition, they're not constrained to time constraints or anything like that.
No.
But hopefully they will do, because it kind of took something away from it for me. You know, it was more than just the theme tune they took away. It was, you know, sort of, it was almost like something Doctor Who that they took away from it.
Yeah.
For me.
Yeah.
Because I, you know, I was sort of like sat there waiting for the theme tune, and thought, what's going on here? And
yeah.
It was just sort of like thrown into this found footage thing.
Yeah.
So, but I thought as a storyline, it was interesting and it was pretty good, but it was let down by that and the found footage feel of it.
Yeah, it wasn't as strong as it could have been. They were as much as I appreciate the fact that they wanted to be experimental, it didn't serve the show. It didn't serve the show.
Mm-hmm. It might have been better off being experimental with something like Downtime or a spin-off.
Yeah.
Or something.
Yeah.
You know, that's kind of like the place to be experimental. Moving on real quickly, I'll tell you what, before we go, marks out of 10 for Sleep No More.
Ignoring my vision problems, I would give it an 8.
I think I'm probably around about 7.
Okay, that's about right.
About now. I mean, I think I gave it 7.5 in my review. I'm not sure. Because my scores are always rounded up because of the, you know, because of the effects and stuff like that.
Yeah.
But I figured we'd mark it and sort of that way for Mr. Moffat and Mark Gatiss happen to listen, they can consider them having bleeding knuckles now.
Yes.
They've been scornfully wrapped.
Yes.
Talking of which, this is a guest who's going to be on the show in a few weeks' time. Singer-songwriter called Emily Hett, and she kind of does this sort of like folk, nerd folk music, I guess she calls it, and she's done a song called Stolen Me, and it's based on The Doctor's Wife.
Oh, cool.
So I'll send you the link to that afterwards so you can have a look at it, but you know, I spent early part of this evening talking to Emily for well over an hour about her music, about the things that she geeks out on and stuff like that. It was a really, really long, rambling discussion. And we're going to have that on the show in a few weeks' time. I figured I'd drop it in now because it's kind of Doctor Who related.
Cool.
But moving quickly on from that, we have Face the Raven.
The stronger of the two episodes, by far.
Oh, by far. Although, you know, we see Clara eventually die in this. It doesn't really do a great deal to resolve her arc.
No, I still say that we this entire time we've been watching a fragment, and that what we're going to learn on the confession disc was that the Doctor knew that the whole time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he kind of figured it out while he was playing with his Lego.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
But it's sort of like, it was a pretty good episode. It was nice to see a shielder back.
Yes. And I have to say, considering that they only, because they had to film Maisie Williams episodes in a block to accommodate the fact that she was a guest actor, because they had a very limited amount of time. What happened was, and this is sort of bizarre serendipity, they wouldn't have had her except that there was a set fire on the Game of Thrones set, one of the Game of Thrones sets that was going to feature prominently in Arya's arc. And so they didn't need her for a period of time that they would have usually needed her for. And so she was free.
Cool.
And so that's why we got a shielder. Now, whether or not we ever see a shielder again is an open question, because it literally is dependent on not only a second, a different story from the Doctor Who end, but whether or not Maisie Williams is free in a timely manner that meshes with Doctor Who filming schedules.
Yeah, so. But the thing is, as she develops into a young woman over the next couple of years, because she's still not fully mature yet. She's about, what, 15?
She's actually 18. She turned 18 on the set of filming Doctor Who. She looks very young, but she's 18.
She does, but as I say, as she matures more over the next couple of years, and they have her back in a couple of years, how are they going to explain the fact that she's aged, given that she's, you know, gone for nearly, what, 500 years without aging a day?
Something like 700 or 800, actually. They've got a very limited window. They're either going to be able to bring her back or not. It's not like Captain Jack, where they slipped in a thing where he's immortal, but he's still aging, because they mentioned that in one of his final appearances. So they could accommodate that. But they can't do the same thing with the shielder, because the shielder's immortality mechanism is not the same thing as his.
Yeah. I kind of like the fact that she housed an underground. And again, this is quite topical and political and relevant to now. She was basically playing host to a refugee camp of aliens.
Yes, yes.
In the middle of London.
Yeah, and I like the fact that they put it there but didn't hit you over the head with it. Because one of the things I don't like is that while sci-fi can be a great venue for social commentary, I don't like it when they hit you over the head with the obviousness of it. There is a line you can cross where you go too far with that kind of allegory. And they managed to do it just enough to get the point across without, being, over the top with it, which I really appreciated.
But, I thought Maisie Williams' performance in it was great.
Oh, yes,
You know, I thought she was fantastic. Also, I felt Jenna Coleman was fantastic, you know, given, you know, it was in the last episode. I read comments on the internet saying, oh, it brought me to tears and stuff like that. I was actually in fits of hysterics. I thought it was really funny.
Yeah, I think part of the problem with that is that we're just not prepared to believe that's the end of the arc. I mean, to tell you the truth, one of the reasons I've had a problem with Clara's arc is, apart from any specific story development, I just, from the name of the doctor on, when she was carried out of the doctor's timeline again, I never believed that that was the whole Clara, ever. And so from that point on, I felt like I was watching the fragment or something that the doctor cobbled together from a fragment or whatever. And so nothing that happened to Clara from that time on had quite the same effect on me, except to think maybe, you know, this was at least a good arc if we're to believe that she's a fragment becoming a person. If you look at it from that perspective, it's a good arc. Other than that, I felt like it was a waste of time. And so from that perspective, I didn't get from her character what other people got from her character.
What about if desperate and grief-stricken from the fact that she died when she got in to save him, what if the doctor sort of like cobbled together some sort of holographic representation of Clara, and that was why?
Either that or he managed to save a fragment and short it up with either block transfer computation or the modern equivalent thereof, if they don't want to go through the classic series to drag that concept out. I can buy that. Yeah.
Yep, that's what I was thinking. Either that or is a Zygon.
Or the other option is that she was always a construct that Missy cobbled together out of a block transfer computation, and that's the reason she survived at all. It's because she was a construct to begin with.
That could also explain what Missy said in her first episode when she talked about pointing Clara in the direction of the Doctor.
Yes, yes, yeah.
You know, it's a lot of interesting stuff. I mean, I thought it was cool to see Rigsy again.
That was awesome, And I loved that they brought Rigsy in and had him do a thing where he spray painted the TARDIS with a memorial to Clara that you saw at the end of the episode. That was cool.
But you know, I thought the justice in this underground part of London that was being meted out by Maisie Williams' character was pretty brutal.
It was, but you could kind of see the level of desperation they were functioning at in the degree of it. Because the situation was that extreme.
Mm-hmm. And I should imagine the swift and fast justice was basically the only way in which she could keep the population down to a manageable level.
Given that
you probably had more and more, you know, sort of like alien refugees putting in. That's kind of like one of those things that went unsaid in this episode, which maybe another show would have hit you over the head with.
I thought
the whole concept was pretty good, and you know, I kind of like the CGI effects for the Raven.
The Raven was real, or at least one of them was.
Yeah, but the CGI effect where it's actually flying into a person's mouth, that's not real.
Although that part, yes. Yeah, that was actually awesome. And I liked the piece of jewelry that she wore to control the shade with. That was very artistically made. And, you know, the whole thing was very well done. What I found interesting is that in articles with interviews with Sarah Dollard, who wrote this episode, originally it was not tied into any of the ARC stuff. Originally it was meant to be a standalone that was going to air earlier in the season, and it was going to have different character beats. And Moffat took one look at it and said, that's awesome, but now can you tie it into ARCs? And so she did a second draft of it. And according to interviews, the first draft, and this will be apparently covered in one of the upcoming Doctor Who magazines, the first draft focused more on a couple of the refugee characters than it did on the Doctor and Clara and anything else that was going on.
Mm-hmm. That's one thing that there was about this show as well. It was very Doctor and Clara heavy. It was basically a triumvirate where Riggs is sort of like the bystander, and most of the meatier stuff is between the Doctor, Clara, and Maisie Williams.
Yes, the shielder. Yes.
The shielder.
Yeah.
And, you know, I kind of like that aspect, but what I also like is I like the fact that Clara has to talk the Doctor down from getting vengeful.
Yes.
And she doesn't quite manage it, really, by the end.
No. From episode descriptions I've read, it's not going to be good. Next week, it looks like he's in a sort of dreamscape. I think what's going to happen is he's going to end up trapped in the Time Lord's matrix that was reintroduced in Dark Water last year, and it's going to be the Time Lords that blackmailed the Shielder into doing all of this. I think that's what next week is going to be.
Yeah, well, if the Time Lords are not making a Shielder into this, what's the point in them giving Doctor more regenerations?
Yeah. I think we're going to find that out.
I don't think it's probably going to be a Time Lord. It's probably some rogue Time Lord. It could be the Vanguard or something like that. Or maybe a little game that Missy's concocted.
Yeah. Whoever it is, it's going to backfire badly because he's not going to be receptive. Let's just say that.
Yeah, well, he didn't seem very receptive at the end. You know, says basically when he said to a Shielder, I'm going to do my best to avoid you, but whatever you do, don't cross me, sort of thing.
Yeah, and while it wasn't her fault directly, I can kind of see where he's coming from, because he's been screwed with on a level at which the Doctor has never appreciated being screwed with throughout the series. So.
Yeah, and if you add to that the fact that Shielder's, you know, since she became immortal, she's sort of like made some epically bad decisions.
Yes.
And he tried to intervene with her once and put her on the straight and narrow, and you know, she sort of like bounced back and went back to sort of like, you know, a similar position to where, you know, to where she was in where he picked her up.
Yes. Yeah.
You know, so it's kind of a strange one. I mean, I actually quite enjoyed the episode on that level. You know.
Yes.
And I'm looking forward to the next one, which I think is the Doctor. I think this next one's going to be the Doctor on his own.
Yes, and one of the reasons I say it might be the Time Lords, or at least a Time Lord, is because there are certain structural similarities to the Deadly Assassin, where he doesn't have a companion with him, and he spends huge amounts of time in the Matrix, and in fact, that's the episode where it's introduced as a concept.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think that's we're looking at that nod in the modern series, basically.
Yeah, and the fact about the Deadly Assassin was it's kind of hard to watch.
Yes. You had in the Deadly Assassin, for those who haven't seen it, for the new fans who are listening, it was an episode that was written in response to Tom Baker positing the notion that the Doctor didn't need a companion. Mm-hmm. And they obliged him by writing an episode where he didn't have one. They set it after The Hand of Fear, after Sarah Jane's departure. And for the first 25 minutes, essentially, the equivalent of the first segments of the serialized story, you basically have Tom Baker's Doctor talking to himself. Literally.
Mm-hmm.
He's just talking to himself.
Which he did anyway, when he had a companion present.
Which he does anyway, but when you see it without one, it's just, it's really painful. It's awful. And it's one of those things where he's back on his home planet and he's surrounded by his own people and he doesn't have a companion and he should be okay because he's surrounded by his own people, but he's absolutely screwed. I mean, just completely screwed. And there are echoes of that in the setup for the episode coming up next week, which makes me believe that the Time Lords or some Time Lord is at least, you know, involved in this somehow. The structural similarities are too much to ignore.
Might be the meddling monk. They might have brought the monk back.
I would love to have the monk back because the Big Finish has done such a good job with him. Big Finish is actually improved on him from the original series.
Yeah, I mean, I was really taken by that recent episode, Black Hole. Really enjoyed that.
Yes.
I was like, I listened to the first three episodes in one go, sort of thing.
Yes.
Which is strange to me, because I normally listen to sort of like two episodes one night and two episodes the following night.
Yeah.
And, you know, sort of like, by the end of episode two, I was hooked.
Yes. Yeah, well, it's a good one. It's a good one. And it's wonderfully timey-wimey, and it's got, you know, it's wonderful. Doctor Who at its best.
You know, talking about Big Finish stuff, there's some great stuff coming out next month. Got a few minutes left to discuss. Not overly long, though, probably about 2 minutes, but I'm looking at what we've got coming up next month. Once I load it up, and let's see, we have The War Doctor Volume 1, Only the Monstrous, coming next month.
That's for you.
Yeah, with John Hurt.
Yes.
And also The Cybermen, the Cybermen one's been held back a month. It looks like the Cyberman one's not going to be coming out next month, unless the site's messing up.
They've got a Dorian Gray one. They've got the next Torchwood one. They've got, and they've got a novel adaptation where the Seventh Doctor meets Sherlock Holmes, played by Nicholas Briggs. And I know for a fact that the Sherlock Holmes series that Nicholas Briggs stars in are excellent. And if I had more time, I would put that on my list. Unfortunately, I don't have time in December for a lot of stuff.
So what ones are you doing next month?
I'm doing Torchwood, and I'm doing Dorian Gray, Spirits of Christmas.
Okay, well, I'm just going to be doing the War Doctor next month, because the ISUS network has been held off to January now.
That's the next one in the classic Doctor series. Yeah, I'm sorry about that.
And I've got bags on Churchill years.
Cool. But I definitely want that in Dropbox. Yeah.
Yeah, and the Diary of River Song comes out in January as well, so I'm pretty sure you're going to want that.
That one's for me. Yes.
Okay, well, so like as we said, there's lots of great Doctor Who stuff coming out on Big Finish. If you guys want to check that out and get a bit of classic Who in the best possible sense, you can go on over to bigfinish.com and you can buy the Big Finish audio adventures from there. Thanks again for listening. Reece and I have to head off now to somewhere else in time and space, so we'll be back at you on Friday with a new episode of SFP Now. So bye for now. Thanks.